It's spoiler in time, folks. This is where we take the hard work we've done on Cord Killers about how to cut the cord, how to watch TV, what devices to use, what shows to pick, and we watched them. And then we get to talk about them with each other. And this week we're talking about episode 6 of season 1 of The Office UK. A little show called Game of Thrones came back for season 8, episode 1 on HBO. And we have some thoughts from Keith on spoilers themselves. I'm Tom Merritt. He's Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, but most importantly, I guess we should introduce our guest.
Yeah, most importantly, we should introduce our guest. Richard Gunther joins us from the Digital Media Zone. Richard, how's it going?
Hello, hello, hello. I am so excited we are talking about Game of Thrones because, you know, that's something I do in my spare time, talk about
You
Thrones.
Talk about Thrones. In fact, you do a podcast with a couple of folks where called Let's Talk About Thrones, where you do.
I do. It's people, Tom, that you might know. It's this this person, Jenny Josephson. I think she was your producer before.
First producer on Daily Tech News Show. Correct.
I think she talks about Star Wars with you.
Yes, also done that with her.
And
yes.
Then Anthony Lemos, who I think is your intern now.
He's the intern on Daily Tech News Show. Yeah.
So it's a little incestuous, but it's it's perfect for Game of Thrones, actually.
Well, yeah, before we do that.
And I'll be on April 29th to talk about episode 3.
Before we do that, we have to eat our vegetables first, and that means take a look at them. Summer movie draft.
Don't sound so dour.
Wow. I don't have any money in this draft yet, and I'm more excited than you. And you're in second place.
Yes, because you have a potential to win, whereas we have nothing but underperformers. Team Night Attack in second place. Dumbo only pulled in 90 million.
Sam won the weekend again, second week in a row.
It's not enough. It's not enough. We're in real trouble. Detective Pikachu has to make all the money. Congratulations ongoing to Team John Trekker, who's at $386 million. And what do we got coming out this week?
The Curse of La Llorona is coming out for Team Hammerson. They paid $6 for it. And then 2 weeks from now, Team Frog Pants spends their whole budget. Well, not quite. They spend 95% of their budget when Avengers Endgame comes out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know that Fandango said that they sold more tickets in the first week for Endgame than they sold in the first week for Infinity War.
Wow. Wow.
And then Longshot is Frog Pants' other $5. That comes out the week after on May 3rd.
Wouldn't it be great? I think we've talked about this before, but wouldn't it be great if Longshot is what gives them the win? Like, just barely.
Just like $5 million is all it needed, and that's the one that provides it. So, I am excited for Team Sword and Laser's first movie, but it's not coming out till May 17th, so we've got a while. Let's get to our triage section, where occasionally we'll get some emails from folks. Keith wrote in and was talking about the fact that he's finally watching Deadwood because of the movie coming out soon, even though he listened to Brian and I spoil Deadwood for the entire run on Spoiler in Time without ever having seen it. He says, I'm midway through the first season and nothing has been ruined from me listening to your recaps. Said the only thing he remembered was something about a kidney stone. So here's what he's thinking. If you know that there's going to be several months until you are going to consume a certain piece of media, go ahead and spoil yourself. If you're like me, you'll forget about most of the stuff by the time you actually get around to watching. There are exceptions for things you care deeply about or things that hinge on plot twists, but I find myself in the middle ground between actively seeking spoilers, like I used to do on sites like Dark Horizons, and actively avoiding them, hashtag Unsullied style. Seems to work for me.
Yeah, in fact, I wonder if the piece of art doesn't actually get like an unintended or, a coincidental benefit, because when you do hit those moments, you have that, oh, that's right, I did hear about this. Or it's like
the kidney stone. Right. Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, in that case, he remembers the kidney stone, but for, you know, any number of other kidney stones, it'll be like, oh my gosh, that's right, I did know about that. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's, I think that's a good take.
All right. Let's get to Game of Thrones. Episode 1, season 8, a big old class reunion. Everybody met everybody. If you're the kind of person who loves it when characters meet up again years later in shows, this was your episode. It was reunion after reunion after reunion. Arya and Gendry, Sansa and Tyrion. Daenerys meeting Samwell Tarly for the first time. That wasn't even a reunion. It ended with Jaime and Bran. Like, I'm forgetting half of them, but it was a solid hour of reunions.
It actually did. It felt like that awkward first couple of hours at a family reunion when it's all process and you haven't gotten to the potato sack race or none of the good stuff yet. But right now you're just all like, oh, that's right. I remember you. Hey.
Well, and there's also when I've been at places, I haven't been to family reunions like you go every year. But I've been in those family situations where you're like, oh, my gosh, I'm getting to see Aunt Esther, see Annie Lane. And I know it's been so long for them. This is cool. And then there's also the awkward moments that you're in as well.
Yeah.
I can't believe how big the kids are now.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, so with that in mind, is this a good episode? Like I'd hate to put it in such pedestrian terms, but in terms of plot advancement and development, there was an adorable scene where we got to see Jon Snow learn to ride a dragon. Outside of that, so little happened that I wouldn't be surprised if this gets put down as one of the least good episodes in the history of the show because so little advanced.
I would doubt it'll be least good. If you don't like moments and you want action, maybe. This is definitely no action episode.
I guess let me requalify that, because I had a good time and I enjoyed seeing it and it certainly wasn't bad, but it's like it's fairly staggering for a show that does a really good job of driving story how little of it got driven this time.
Well, you had the moment where Samwell Tarly is, because all the moments are, if they're not reunions, they're setups, right? The moment where Daenerys has to tell Samwell Tarly, oh yeah, no, I have my dragon kill your brother. Sam didn't really care about his father. He's like, well, at least my brother's alive. She's like, bad news there too. Also toasted him. So that has set up an enmity that he has for Daenerys, which leads him to follow Bran's advice slightly more willingly to finally tell Jon Snow, you're Aegon Targaryen. That is a big revelation. That is a plot mover, right? Jon Snow realizing that is important to this story. And so that is something that actually happened. It may not be action, but it's something we needed to happen. And that was the moment where Eileen and I were like at the edge of our seats, you know, leaning forward like, oh my gosh, here it comes. Here he's going to tell him. Yeah. And then actually the dragon riding scene, you know, a little bit action, but also he got to ride a dragon. That's going to be proof that story about him being a Targaryen is right, because only Targaryens can ride dragons.
Exactly. Yeah. And the dragon riding scene, you know, it's funny. I look at that in a couple of ways. In one way, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was wonderful. In another way, I thought it was kind of a cheesy in a, can you read my mind from Superman kind of way, but it did reestablish or it did establish that whole him being part of that family and the relationship between him and the dragons and the relationship between him and Dany, which is now only dramatically complicated by him being the rightful heir. And, oh, by the way, her nephew.
Yeah. Auntie wife.
Yeah. So also weird punch out. And I understand that there was a bit of a motivation with of why they did it.
Yeah.
But until your explanation, Bryce, which we'll share momentarily, I was very confused as to why you would drop a nuclear bomb of you know, who Jon Snow is, but then spend the last 5 minutes setting up an awkward, ooh, you're at the party too. I sort of pushed you out a window that one time, and then end with that. But you were saying that was all intentional.
Yeah. So I watched the, on the HBO Now, they put like the behind the scenes stuff after the credits of the show. Mm-hmm. And it was Benioff or Weiss who was saying, well, actually this episode is pretty much a mirror of the first episode, right? It's the Lannisters arriving at Winterfell. It's the Starks welcoming them, and it ends with the Lannisters and the Starks having that interaction of kicking Bran off the tower. So in that sense, it is symbolically an ending to fit that mirror, but it is also short of it. No one said anything yet, right? Like, everything good about that interaction of them reuniting is going to be the beginning of next episode.
Well, and plus also they've done such a good job of establishing that Bran is becoming extra human at this point. And, yeah, you know, I already assume he's beyond petty, you know, you know, he's going to say some, you know, Jamie's going to come over and say, sorry, I pushed you out a window. And then Bran's going to say, like, I'm more tree now than man. I've evolved beyond your petty grievances. Everything happens for a reason.
You're so jaded. I loved that punch out. I thought that was great. I cannot wait to see Jamie have to confront Bran and all the things that Jamie has gone through and how different he is. And now he has to walk up and see what is probably one of his greatest regrets, and go like, oh man, and I did that for her. Crap. I don't know. I thought that was heavy with a lot of emotion for me.
I agree. I think it's an interesting setup for them, and it's an interesting setup for Jamie. And we also got the setup of Cersei basically saying, oh, by the way, I want you to go and kill both of my brothers.
Yeah, was that new? Because it was kind of understated, which made me think that we had known that was her plan the whole time.
She the last time we saw her with Jamie, she said, if you leave here, I'm pretty much going to kill you. In not so many words. And we already know she wants to kill Tyrion. So, yeah, I think that's why it was understated. She's like, no surprise to anybody. I want to kill Tyrion. And I told Jamie if he left the castle that he's dead to me. So here you go. Would you kill them with the same crossbow that Tyrion used to kill Dad? And I have a feeling that crossbow is going to end up in Tyrion's hands again somehow.
How credible do we find Euron as a sinister familiar of Cersei?
Oh, I think he's playing that role geniusly. I think he comes across as completely mad. And so, frankly, you know, seeing him, and I love the way they did that too. Like, you don't get to see what transpired between them. You see them before, you see them after, and he still has his cocky swagger, and he's just, you know, he's all about himself. I hate his character, so... For me, that's a good reinforcement that he's doing a good job convincing me.
I liked him. I like him sometimes. I liked him in the finale of last season when he pretends to leave and you know, he's all swagger. I liked, you know, when he's telling Yara that she's screwed, but yeah, I need somebody to talk to. That's fine. I would have cut most of the throne room scene. Basically, he should have been Cersei saying, you know what? I'm the queen. I get to choose whatever I want to do. And then cut to him in her bedroom. I didn't need to see the whole situation where he's like, oh, but come on, lady, blah, blah, blah. I get kind of tired of him.
Yeah, but they did this great setup where he talks about, you know, potentially impregnating her, which is an interesting complication given what she has claimed thus far.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah. For me, that is the thing that lets me know his days are numbered.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no way Cersei's gonna let that man, like, sweet talk his way into being a part of the royal family.
Oh, no. That's no.
Well, and if they were portraying her as understanding what a weakened position she was in, mm-hmm. I could imagine a desperate compromise kind of plot line, but there's nothing about the way she was acting that made me think that she perceives herself as weakened at all.
No, right? she thinks she's in the pole position. She's right. Like, they're all going to beat each other up north. The whatever side wins will be weakened, and I'll be able to finish him up because I've got the Golden Company. I win. That's what she thinks.
If that's the case, then I know, Tom, maybe you're over the bed romantics, but and maybe this is partially driven by the fact that I'm midway through like my fifth lap of the fourth Dark Tower book, Wizard in Glass. But there's a character who's a bad guy who discovers something, and it's late in the story that he discovers that the tavern owner is a real wildcat who is a dirty talker and all this stuff. And and they spark up this fling, for lack of a better word. It's not a serious romance, but somebody who's cold, calculating, but has a sexual weakness for the grossness, the filthiness of this one tavern owner, Machiavellian chick. I could see something like, I enjoyed it enough in Wizard and Glass that I could see them doing that with Euron as the dalliance of Cersei.
Oh yeah, I'm fine with that. I have no problem with the bedroom part of it. I was just bored by the whole back and forth in the throne room. I was like, this. I know where this is either going or not going. Just show me where it ended up.
Well, because I
know
I
who
Euron
is.
Up...
I don't need to be shown more of who Euron is or what her motivations are.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't think she would have put up with that. She's kind of a cut or go kind of person, and to put up with him bantering on and on, she would have just had him escorted out or something like that. I was actually really surprised that they took it where they did. And I frankly don't understand why they did that, because it puts her in a position of vulnerability. And I don't get that as far as the story is concerned.
Yeah, I just would have jumped to it quicker. I think she's using Euron like Brian's talking about, and she's like, well, I kicked Jaime out, and he's gonna, I have somebody gonna kill him, so you know, I need something to keep me busy. Sure, you'll do.
I don't know. Weirdly, I almost would have. And this is a weird thing for me to imagine, but like if he had just full on Dirk Diggler'd in the throne room and shown like a monster piece with good a prosthetic, God, then you're like, yeah, that's good enough. Then this would be a simple. I would understand. Like, okay, this is a dalliance.
I don't need that in the throne room either.
Okay. Well, I mean, it is a throne of swords.
The bedroom talk is all I needed, with Cersei going like, yeah, you're arrogant. I like that. Whatever. Get out. I got things to do. Like, that told me everything about that relationship that I needed to know. And I already know Euron wants to F the queen. He's already said that how many millions of times? Like, I didn't need another scene to show me like, oh, yeah, you know, well, I know.
But that's what I seek to understand, is what she sees in him, because she doesn't see power. She doesn't see success. She doesn't see anything that she needs. They've established all this. So I don't understand why she's even entertaining him.
Sex.
Yeah, they kind of set up that she's been a little lonely.
Yeah, I guess so. But not so lonely as to... take Euron.
I mean, better.
Well, I mean, I get where you're going. Like, diplomat, you know, she could have anybody in the castle. Why Euron? So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he entertains her.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a little bit of that. That goes back to your Wizard of Glass thing. Like, oh, it's because he's interesting, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Where it's just like, oh, this is something I've never experienced before. It's I've never gotten it. Or even, you know, heaven forbid, maybe a little bit of character development with Cersei, where she's like, I've spent my whole life thinking that I was a good person who just needed to do certain things to get by. But now you make me realize that I just love being bad, or whatever. Like,
no, something. That's not Cersei.
I'm like, who are you talking about?
Cersei was sleeping with her cousin. Remember? Like, I take it more of like, oh, we've seen her cheat on Jaime and Robert with her cousin. But disrespect him because he was boring. So it's already set us up like, oh, Euron is interesting. Okay, I guess that's why.
Well, and I guess in that case, maybe they could have written him as interesting.
Because he's a swashbuckling pirate.
Point Bright.
Right?
I think we spent way too much time on that scene. There's so many other scenes. Like, I'm very intrigued on what Arya was asking Gendry to make for her, to the point that we paused it to look, and it looks like an arrowhead, where the arrowhead has the word dragon glass next to it, but some kind of holder for the arrowhead instead of being an arrow, so that it comes apart. But
so it's like maybe like a I don't know, I'd imagine like a Gatling gun kind of a slingshot thingy or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Some kind of rapid fire. Next week
we see her holding a bow, but it's not that arrow in it, so that probably has nothing to do with it.
Yeah,
it's not just a version of needle. I did not see that graphic, I guess, or the
it's exactly as Tom described it. Yeah. And I wondered if it was supposed to break apart because they wanted to make sure that the dragon glass would stick with whoever it went into, but then they'd be able to retrieve this other piece and still use it as a weapon for something else. And what I'm curious is, what good is that?
I mean, I took it as just, or maybe it's a blow dart thing. Whatever it is, I took it as MacGuffin that does zombie killing ordnance, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably fine. But they went to such trouble to make sure to point our eyes to it. I'm like, okay, maybe it's a clue. And if it is, I can't tell what it's supposed to be a clue to.
Yeah. But whatever it is, it'll be the weapon of choice for
it's definitely something that is meant to stab or throw or hit and then stay, right? Because if you try to pull it out, it won't remove the tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then what's the rest of it good for?
Yeah. Huh. Also, it's nice to see Sansa has finally come into her own, right?
Yeah, I understand she has every she has every right to be cold and distant and unlikable. She's earned it with all the crap she's had to go through. But it's great to see her actualized. I would like to enjoy her company more.
Well, we have to get, it's all the trust process, right? And no one else trusts Daenerys.
Correct.
And that's what she is representing. She is representing the people's distrust of Daenerys. So
yeah, instead of being a bending willow, she's like, you know what? I'm the Lady of Winterfell now. And so A, you're another lady coming into my castle. You need to treat me with respect. And B, who the F are you anyway? And what have you done to my friend Jon Snow, my brother Jon Snow, who I never really liked until now, but now I'm going to like him.
And we have this great conversation between her and Tyrion where she basically lays him out and says, you know, I took you for being cleverer than that, in meaning in believing Cersei, kind of reinforcing just that she's one step ahead here.
Yeah. G-N-I-L-D-R-A-H in the chat says Sansa sounded a lot like Cersei. Maybe that's what I was picking up on, is that, you know, the weapon that she has become is a little bit scary and not as fun as I would hope.
That's true. She is not fun right now. That is definitely true. What else we got?
We got the fact that Jon Snow, like what is Jon's position? And he's being asked by everybody, like, hey man, you were king in the North, and now what are you? Like, are you anything? What is this?
He's and Jon has always been the guy who's like, no, I don't want to be king. Oh, I guess I have to be king to get us out of this situation. All right, fine. And so in his mind, he's like, well, obviously I handed over my crown. She's got all of that army that you just saw that we need to fight the North. What's your problem? He's always been horrible at public relations, right? He never considers what he needs to do to win over the people. And so I think Jon's being consistent in that he's like, what? Oh, I had to get people on my side? Well, that's stupid. It's very obvious that she has dragons and a big army of Unsullied and Dothraki. What do I need to convince you of, people? That's dumb. But he's wrong. He has to do that.
And so in steps the best PR agent of all, Tyrion, to kind of lay things out as they really
are. Although sending a Lannister to be a PR per flack to the Starks, I don't know.
Oh, right. Maybe that's not the best idea.
So who and how, because what we don't have by the end of this episode is any sense that Jon Snow is accepting of his destiny, of what it means to be the one true heir and king to the throne. Does somebody convince him so that he can convince the crowds?
I mean, we had a moment where Sam tells him, you're not Jon Snow, you're Aegon Targaryen. I'm willing to give him a beat till the next episode to process that. Like, no, that can't be true. So he's going to doubt it. He's going to deny it. He wants Daenerys to be in charge and he'll lead battles. That's fine. He's never wanted to be the king of anything, so he's going to fight it. I hope we see that next episode is him struggling with, like, no, but I don't want to accept this, however it's true. And it's going to drive a knife between him and Daenerys, A, because, you know, they're related now, and B, because he is a threat to her power.
Yep. Also, 100% Jon Snow dies because
device. Here's where we go into territory that I hate. We're guessing what's going to happen.
Wait, hello. No, welcome to the internet. I'm sorry you got lost, but this is where you are. There's no way the two of them hand in hand on the throne happen. I do think that it will cause a rift and there'll be people who are team Daenerys and people who are team Jon Snow, but they'll all agree that, well, I guess we'll have to have a wedding and a marriage or whatever. And then Jon Snow dies and Daenerys sits the throne. And then we all.
No. Daenerys has a baby and Daenerys dies and the baby sits the throne.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so like the last Cribs. Scene is Tyrion and the family of the survivors are going to raise this kid right. And he's going to,
yeah. Right. Did Hot Pie die? Maybe Hot Pie comes back as regent. I think everyone else dies.
Everyone else, really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm prepared for every single person to die.
I did just come to the realization that, like, Daenerys and Jon, you know, kind of sitting on top of the, you know, winning the battle and winning the power would be a very happy ending. And
too happy for this show.
Yeah.
So there's no way it happens. We all agree that much, right? There's no universe where the two of them both live.
There's no universe where they're both on the throne. They took that out of the equation now that they're related. That's just not going to happen. That's not in Jon's.
I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible that Daenerys says, oh, well, then you're the true heir. And us Targaryens, we love marrying our relatives. Let's get hitched. But
she'd be okay with that, but he would not.
No, he wouldn't.
I bet I bet she dies and John sticks around and is the Targaryen
they're
of note.
Both dying.
You're convinced?
I don't know.
I'm convinced.
Oh, okay.
So I may be wrong about everyone else dying, but I'm pretty sure John and
you know what I love is that there's no way we're not right about this because we've covered all the possibilities.
I think so. Yeah, I think we're safe. All right, good. Excellent. Well then, any other thoughts on Game of Thrones?
Good. I look forward to it starting.
Yeah, it was a fun episode, and I think they did a good amount. I know that they don't go for fan service necessarily, but fans should have really enjoyed this episode because it feels like they gave us a lot. Worth noting, they're spending $15 million an episode this season.
Yeah. That's how you get burning arms and a small person to pretend to be a burning little boy.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the burning kid.
Oof.
Yeah. Very... I mean, what's to say? It's White Walker stuff.
It was definitely chilling.
Yeah. Well, and then it was hot. All right. Next week, we will talk about episode 2 of Game of Thrones season 8. Let's move on to The Office UK, episode 6 of season 1. This is the end of series 1, as they call it in the UK. Episode's called Judgment. It starts with David dismissing a warehouse worker and then getting called on the carpet by Jennifer for, while he's dismissing a warehouse worker, hiring a secretary. And David pretends to not know who the secretary is. Then after Jennifer leaves and having given him the news that he is going to be promoted and his branch will be closed and merged into Swindon. He gets pressured by everybody to tell them just that. And he's like, hey, good news. I got a promotion. Also, some of you are losing your jobs, but I don't want to tell you who. There's a party that night. And at the party, he reveals that, in fact, he is not taking the promotion and Swindon will be merged into the Slough office. And he did it for them. Then he gets confronted, and it turns out that he failed the physical that was required for him to get this promotion, and that's why he's not taking it. And we sort of got thrown in at the end that Tim suddenly decided to accept an offer of a promotion to stay with Slough, and he's not going off to pursue his dreams.
Yeah, okay. I thought that was the weaker of the two parts. Like we said last week, you know, Tim just sort of out of nowhere said, I want out, I'm done, I'm fed up. And then they resolved that very smoothly, which felt like that's what they were going to do because it was a kind of out of nowhere to begin with. Yeah. So it's kind of out of nowhere to fix it. But in the evolving differences between Michael Scott and David Brent, this was a pivotal episode in like Michael Scott would have agonized over this. He would have wanted to advance. He would have wanted, but he loves nothing more than being loved by his crew. David Brent, not a thought. Advancement, cold cutthroat, boom, make up an excuse later. And so that was very stark to me, and I'm enjoying starting to understand the differences between the two.
Yeah, I thought that this felt very different. This felt very UK, David Brent, I shouldn't even say UK based. It felt very David Brent situation because Brent just does whatever he wants and then lies to try to make up for it afterwards. He doesn't have I don't even think Michael Scott had a moral compass so much as a need to be loved, but David Brent is like, I need to be loved in the moment, so I'll say whatever I need to make you love me right now, but I'm not thinking ahead about it. I'm not worried about it outside of that. I thought this was a kind of a choppy plot, kind of back, you know, pulling you back and forth, but by the end when they realized, oh, it's a medical examination, which I guess is a thing. Can you not get a promotion if you have high blood pressure?
Maybe that's a UK thing, because I'm pretty
know.
Sure
I was
that
a
would not
unsure
be.
On that.
It feels like a violation of the ADA here in the US. So I think that I'm gonna really process this and try to figure out the character diamonds of Michael Scott and David Brent. They both certainly share as a primary attribute weakness, but their secondary characteristic is one is a crippling need for love, a codependence, a love me world that fuels the stuff that, and because he's weak, Michael Scott spends irresponsibly, manages poorly, makes wrong decisions. But David Brent, it feels like ambition or maybe
narcissism, maybe just narcissism in general. He's convinced that, you know, he could be a traveling folk singer if he wanted to. I don't know. No,
I think you're right. I think narcissism is closer to the character flaw, because he does want admiration, right? Because he's narcissistic. He's not codependent. If someone doesn't like him and they're out of sight, they're out of mind. He doesn't care.
Yeah. Also, how about that random drop of the N-word? Definitely had to back up and say, did I just hear that?
I noticed that too. Well, now we know why it's TVMA.
Yeah. I liked what you said about this being choppy, because when the party scene happened, I definitely was like, did I drift off? Did I miss something? And then, you know, figured out that I didn't. They just kludged it together rather, I don't know, weird.
Also, I wasn't sure what to make of Dawn being disappointed with Tim. Although I did like that he sort of said, join me and together we can rule the Slough side. My job's open. You should apply. Because it's both a disappointing her because he's not following his dreams, but making her happy because he's still going to be around. And, you know, even though she has a boyfriend, she does like him. I think that's pretty clear. And him kind of saying, hey, let me help you get a better position, even if it's not the best thing for you. It's better than being a receptionist, because you just said you don't want to be a receptionist all your life.
So without instigating a who did it better debate, would it be fair to say that I feel like in the Jim, Pam, Tim, Dawn situation, the U.S. office certainly made it clearer to me within a matter of 6 episodes where everybody was, and they acted consistently. I don't know that they've quite done it in the UK version, and maybe that's something that just wasn't clear to them at that time.
You mean like talking about all the characters, not just the Pam and Scott?
No. Specifically the relationship stuff, because.
No, I think Dawn and Tim are much more vague.
Yes.
We know Dawn likes him, but we don't know how much. Is it just sort of a friend, like little bit extra than a friend, but would never threaten her relationship? Is it I have doubts in my relationship? We don't know. We know she doesn't feel comfortable in her relationship because we saw a couple of fights, but we also saw her team up on making fun of Tim with her current boyfriend.
Right.
There's a lot more ambiguity there.
And weirdly, I felt like that moment that the fiance was giving Tim sass kind of made him likable to me, which was also confusing, because it's like, well, he's not a total piece of garbage. I mean, that is a way to break the tension when you find out that somebody tried to hit.
Oh, at the party in this episode when he's like, hey, I hear you asked my girlfriend out. I'm just winding you up, man. It's
right,
fine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, it was like, oh, okay. You don't suspect anything, and you like Tim enough to feel like you could get away with winding him up, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah. If anything, it made me like him more, which is, again, something the U.S. version did differently,
it
where it's like you hated
the U.S.
him.
Version or whatever. Like, he was just always awful. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. And then that made you, you know, sympathetic, and you could tell how bad Jim wanted to step in and save the day, but couldn't for, you know, political reasons and so on. So Roy, there you go. Thank you very much, Bryce.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Bryce. That's all I got for The Office.
Yeah, to be honest, going into season 2 or series 2, if we're speaking British, I expect it to get really good really fast. I could tell that the elements are all there, but I think if it's anything like most second seasons, this is where it's really going to find its voice.
Oh, I sure hope it does.
Do you know anything about series 2?
Richard has been hanging around. If you were like, why is Richard still here? You did watch a couple episodes of The Office UK, and then you just stopped.
Well, I've watched up to 5 with you guys. I had watched this long ago, and this is one of those bleeping shows that I'm watching regardless of what bleeping. I'm falling into last week's persona. This is one of those shows that I'm watching because I feel like I should have seen it. It's kind of classic television. And I'm kind of ashamed of the fact that I never saw this, particularly since I've seen all of The Office in the U.S. So I want to follow it through, but it's just hard. It's really hard. I'm not a fan of the awkward, and I'm really not a fan of bad production, and this show has a lot of it. So I'm trudging along with you on this.
Oh, you know what? Talking about production, It's wild because it's widescreen. It's 16 by 9, but it's not HD. And because it's not HD, it's weird to see something with the widescreen format that they're doing the old-fashioned television thing of, like, faces taking up 90% of the screen, like cutting off the foreheads and stuff. So you're just staring at their acne scars and stuff. Like it's something that you didn't notice was endemic to television up until HD came along. But it just feels so claustrophobic and choked. It's really weird. Well,
and that's part artificial. It wasn't originally that way because the older UK format was actually more square than 16 by 9, but not quite as squatty as our 4 by 3. So it was like somewhere in the middle. So they actually are cutting off some of what you would have seen originally.
In order to hit that 16 by 9. Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's called shooting 4-3 safe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, folks, next week we will talk about Game of Thrones, episode 2 of season 8. We've got more of Barry season 1 talk coming. We kind of skipped that over to give us a little extra time for Game of Thrones. And The Office series 2 begins. Richard Gunther, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be here. And if you are a Game of Thrones watcher, I hope that you'll come and listen to us talk about it. We have a lot of fun. And those episodes will be hitting about a day or two after each of the TV episodes is on the air.
Excellent. Go check it out. Let's talk about Thrones. And thanks for watching or listening to Spoiler in Time and supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll spoil you again next week.
Bob hopes you have enjoyed this program.